Hi, Richard Smith. Welcome again to Cable.
Hi, Bill. Happy to be here again.
Richard Smith is a historian of modern China, also an environmental activist. He co-founded the organization System Change, Not Climate Change. His books and writing include China's Engine of Environmental Collapse, just out this year. Previously, he wrote Green Capitalism, The God That Failed. And he's written many important articles, all quite accessible on the net. In part one last week of this two-part interview, we discussed whether human society can survive climate change. We concluded that exponential growth is just not possible on a finite planet, and that we must replace capitalism with a production system that's democratic and sustainable. In part two today, we'll first discuss the human future as the people here and around the planet, as they wake up to the reality of climate change. In a period maybe 5 or 10 or even 20 years from now, in the period of multiple and frightening climate disasters and looming disasters, people wake up to demand action, sweeping action that we must stop the trajectory to doom. Second today, Richard and I will discuss how we here in this country can build the movements that can overcome elite and capitalist resistance to our plan, so that they gain power and authority to direct the mobilization of people and economies across the planet that will be necessary to stop climate warming. Richard Smith, the distinguished eco-socialist Michael Lowy, conducted in thesis one of his monthly review essay, 13 Theses on the Imminent Ecological Catastrophe and the Revolutionary Means of Averting It. He contended that the ecological crisis is already the most important social and political question of the 21st century. It will become even more so in the coming months and years. In the last paragraph of your essay, An Eco-Socialist Path to Limiting Temperature Rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius, that was in the Real World Economic Review, you offered your sense of the immediate future, that there will be intensifying climate disasters. And then, I quote, people everywhere will look for government to do what the science demands before it's too late. So, Richard, give us more detail, your sense about the changing climate and how the people will react.
Well, thanks, Bill, for the introduction. Of course, the most difficult thing we face is that we're organizing, fighting a struggle here for not just for a class, but for the whole of humanity. And the problem is, of course, the changes that we need to make are wrenching changes that are going to affect every single person. You know, we're going to have to sacrifice a lot of industries. We're going to cut back on production of all kinds of things. We're going to have to ration airplane flights. We're going to have to abolish the annual new car automobile charade. We're going to have to abolish iPhones 12, 13, 14. Now, you can't have phones, but you can have phones that can last for decades and not be tossed out and replaced every 2-3 years. So it's going to be huge changes in jobs and kinds of consumption and so forth, which have the opportunity for us to create a better world for us and our children in the future. But in the meantime, it's very, very difficult to organize people for that, because the intuitive understanding of people is that what we need to do to suppress fossil fuel emissions impacts jobs and levels of consumption. And they're right about that. It does. That's the problem. So the only way, as I tried to argue in my Eco-Socialist Path article, we need to close down industries like the coal industry, the oil industry, much of the auto industry, suppress many kinds of production of chemicals and plastics and just all kinds of things, synthetic fabrics, you name it. We just cannot build an eco-socialist economy with an economy built on perpetual expansion, a perpetual consumption of and perpetual invention of new needs we don't really need, and perpetual consumption of resources to make those. So if we're going to cut back on these things and reorganize our economy, we have to give new jobs. We have to guarantee new jobs to every single person that's affected across the entire industrial economy. And pitches have been made in that direction. Bernie Sanders did say that in the small print in his program. He didn't emphasize it enough in talking to people. He talked about the need to suppress fossil fuel emissions, but he didn't say, I want to guarantee every single person a new job. And that's not quite the same thing as saying, well, new solar panel and wind turbine industries will create new jobs. People need guarantees of jobs. They can't just depend on the pie in the sky. Oh, well, hopefully we'll get a new job down there someday, because in the meantime, they're going to try to hold on to what they have, which are fossil fuel-based jobs. And that's a rational thing for them to do for themselves and their families. But it's a suicidal thing to do in the collective and for the whole of society to pursue.
Right. It seems to me that 5 years from now, 20 years from now, it's not at all clear. It's indeterminate. But the scientists are clear we are moving into a period of immense climate disasters. And as you pointed out, the people are going to then begin understanding. Let me quote you here. The people everywhere will look for government to do what the science demands before it's too late. Now, my sense is that we aren't going to be the only one. At that point, when the demands are desperate and loud and majoritarian, to say the least, at that point, the people who run industry, our national elites, the elites of the world, are also going to wake up, and their propagandists and their pundits and their bought intellectuals and their advertising firms and public relations firms, they're going to be way ahead of it. And they're going to tell capital, and capital is going to know it themselves, that they have to stop the left. They cannot allow the left to be the only people with a program. When the people demand change, they're going to have to offer something. What do you see? You've written on it. Tell us about the corporate program now, greenwashing, you know, their geoengineering, carbon sequestration. Tell us what they're doing, Richard. And then we can start talking in more detail about what we can do now. But first, tell us what the corporate capital and their many, many arms are going to start offering.
Well, it goes without saying that capitalist industrialists are not inclined to want to cut back on production or let alone close industries. But this is imperative, and there is no way around this. But what I proposed in my Eco-Socialist Path article is that, quite amazingly, society could buy them out. In other words, I said, you know, we don't really have decades to wage a class struggle to overthrow the capitalists and nationalize their industries by force. It makes so much more sense to simply buy them out, and we could do that. The entire fossil fuel industrial structure in the U.S., the oil companies, the coal companies, the distribution network, the auto industry, the aviation industry, which is Boeing, basically, and the plastics industries, the major chemical companies, the overwhelming majority of fossil fuel, of downstream fossil fuel consuming industries, that is the chemical industries, the plastics, the pesticides, and so forth, that consume fossil fuels, in addition to the fossil fuel producers, the oil companies and so forth, all of this could be bought. This was before COVID. I wrote this in 2019. This is before COVID for about a little less than $3 trillion. In other words, just a little less, actually, than 2.7, which was what Donald Trump had given away as a tax break to the wealthy. So, in other words, one could simply rescind that tax break and pay for a buyout of the entire industrial structure. Quite amazingly cheap. And I ran this by an economist friend of mine to see if he thought the numbers were right. And he said, yeah, the numbers are right. It's really quite an amazing thing here that it's not so expensive as you might think. Nonetheless, we need an across-the-board approach to find ways to close down and phase out the major fossil fuel industrial producers and downstream consumers. There's just no way around that. Everybody wants to talk about transitioning to solar power and wind. That's fine, but that's only one aspect of that's only part of emissions. The largest share of emissions are produced by transportation, by autos and trucks and airplanes and trains. And those need to be cut back. They need to be fewer cars. We need to ration airplane flights and so forth. But companies can't stay in business like that. So we need to nationalize them, basically take them into public hands, not completely shut them down, but ration flights and suppress the whole industrial new car business and make cars to be rebuildable forever, you know, like Volkswagen Beetles or something like that, electric. And do this in a way that keeps those industries on a reduced scale, but still alive, but producing more reasonably sustainable products. This can be done through nationalizing them, through buyouts and so forth like that. So the capitalists will resist, but they can see the writing on the wall too. So you see right today, you see like Shell Oil and other companies are investing in, you know, they're trying to do what John Brown, Lord John Brown did back in the 90s with BP. They're trying to turn these companies into energy companies instead of just oil companies. So they're investing in solar power and wind power and so on and so forth. And that's fine. That's good. And some companies will be able to make that transition. Others will not, and they'll collapse or be bought out by society and so forth. So we have to do what we can to make the transition as easy as possible. Of course, it's going to be wrenching and massively difficult, but we have to find a way forward for those companies, because don't forget that the companies are not just evil capitalists at the top. There are plenty of those guys. But don't forget that the major part of the stock of those companies are owned by pension plans and so on and so forth by lots of workers. I mean, about 25% of oil stocks are owned by workers' pension plans. So we don't want to expropriate the workers. We want to buy them out. We don't want to bankrupt the workers here to close down the fossil fuel companies that need to be closed to save the workers. So we need to have a way to do this. And there are ways to do this by taxing and buying them out and various other schemes, you know, monetary extent, so forth. So this can be done. So the capitalists will want to keep things going as much as they can, naturally, logically, for their shareholders, for their employees, too, and for the governments, the states, and so forth, and cities that depend on those industries. They will want to keep them going. But we're going to get to the point that we can't keep going on the way we are. Just look at Florida, that building that collapsed a couple of days ago. It did so most probably because of subsistence and dissolving of the cement by seawater infiltration. The whole of Florida is just completely, you know, it's a sponge. It's a limestone sponge. They built entire cities on this. It's going to be buildings collapsing left and right. And also, the Florida Keys are going underwater now. And they're talking about, oh, well, can we elevate the highways? We can elevate the highways, elevate the houses. No, those highways, those houses are going to go. Those islands are going to go. And most of the coast of Miami is going to go. So when this happens, people are going to say, well, maybe we need to do something about this. Now, it could go in a bad direction. It could go towards some kind of eco-fascism. Who knows? You know, I don't know. I mean, all we can do is try to propagandize as much as we can for the most democratic possible solutions we can. Popular control, popular power, and system-wide democratization. That's our best hope, I think.
This is Bill Resnick on Cable Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, talking to Richard Smith, an eco-socialist activist and writer who's written Green Capitalism, The God That Failed. He co-founded the organization System Change, Not Climate Change. We've been discussing that climate change is not going to stop. It's continuing. It's going to get worse. There's going to be a point when the people awake. Capitalism will have its program ready. We can have our program ready. Richard Smith discussed a number of points in the program, including nationalization of most of the productive structure of the U.S., although saving some of the plants and some of the factories, and of course they have to be converted to other forms of producing sustainably. Richard, the question though becomes, how do we get there to the point when people decide maybe not to nationalize the companies, but what if they decide we need to have an economy like the Roosevelt administration proposed during the Great Depression, and then, in fact, imposed as the people were demanding, imposed during World War II, an economy where, in fact, the national federal government was telling the capitalist firms, build airplanes, build tanks, build ports, build weaponry of many kinds, employ women, pay decent wages, although there's nothing to spend money on, and there were a few unfortunate things that Roosevelt demanded of unions. In any event, Pearl Harbor was a massive wake-up call in the same way that Florida going underwater, and not just that, New Orleans as well, the Gulf in most of China, which is only a few feet above sea level, that is certainly the manufacturing areas that you described in your book, and vast droughts, prices spiking, people are going to wake up and demand a command economy. I think it won't be called nationalized. It will be called our survival emergency economy to keep people on Earth alive, especially us. And in fact, it will be a nationalization. There's going to be various committees and agencies and instrumentalities will be set up for planning and for planning that command economy. It seems to me, Richard, that's how it's going to happen. But it's not going to happen unless we operate in the next couple years before the climate disasters become so frequent that the people become alarmed, so that they're able to imagine our program and imagine that the left is in fact correct in what it wants to do versus the corporations who will just call for more research and carbon sequestration and the rest and geoengineering and pouring stuff into the ocean to try and reduce carbon dioxide. Their quack proposals may go down heavily, but we have to show that we can do it. Right now, one of the most important things we can do is show models of how effective it is in an economy, fund model cities, show people that, in fact, renewable energy can work, that electrified transit can work, that with energy conservation and use reduction, that can make it more feasible to build out enough energy supplies. My sense is that in the near future, we have to build out the models. We still have to do blockadia and boycott, divest sanctions of various groups. We certainly have to degrow, as you pointed out, but I'm not sure we have to tell people we have to degrow. In World War II, there was a tremendous degrowth in some ways of consumer goods and conservation of tin and metals, and people accepted degrowth even though we didn't say, sorry, folks, you can't buy a car for the next 3 years, which is in fact what happened because there were none available or only a few. But they were able to accept those sacrifices or the common good.
Yeah, no, you're right. The war emergency was quite different than the emergency we face now. For one thing, it was a short duration, a matter of 3 or 4 years, 5 years at the most. Also, it was built on expansion, on tremendous industrial expansion and new industries and so forth. So it led to rapid increase in employment and so forth. Our emergency is kind of the opposite. It's a much bigger emergency in scale, of course. You know, the fate of the human race, humanity, is in the answer to this problem. But it's a different kind of emergency. It asks us to not grow industries so much as reduce industries and suppress many industries and so forth. This is a harder sell for sure. But it does mean, and it does require us to have a common sacrifice. But you know, there's nobody agitating for this. Nobody's doing this. You know, I mean, Joe Biden is a pale image of FDR and during World War II. You know, but that's what we do need to do. We do need to restructure industries to produce things we need, like solar panels and windmills instead of automobiles and airplanes and condominiums and so forth. You know, for the ruling class. We need to dramatically restructure the whole industrial structure. But in the end, we have to face up to the fact we have to produce a lot less stuff, less services, less electricity, consume less. But in the process, we can have a shorter working day. We can have a fuller life. We can have all we need and plenty without all the surplus stuff and gadgets and junk that we don't need, that we're sold constantly, told we need, you know, everything from Alexa to self-driving cars and space tourism and just, you know, Bitcoin, just on and on and on. The endless creation of nonsense we don't need. This has to be completely overthrown and create a society that produces what we do need. which is the basic necessities for every single person to have a good housing, a good job, good schooling, good health care, and so on and so forth. So it requires a completely different approach to the economy than capitalism. But it will require us to sacrifice in common to produce this better world, and I think people will be happy to do that when they're motivated to do so, when they see a way forward for them to benefit from that. It's not, I'm not calling for austerity here, though we do have to recognize that we do have to do away with some consumer conveniences, like, you know, you could say single wrap plastics and some plastic bags and plastic this and stuff. We just have to do away with those things, and we'll manage, you know. Our parents in the 1950s and 40s and 50s didn't have any of this plastic stuff, and they weren't living in caves. They were doing very well, thank you very much. And so we can do so again at a much better level. We don't need to have all this disposable junk that's trashing up the oceans and destroying the planet. We need to be pushing on all fronts, creating models, as you say, examples. Those are hugely important, of what can be done in cities, what can be done in industries, and so on and so forth. But it's, of course, difficult when we don't have the reins of power in government, and we don't have people in control of industries that are interested in that, but we have to do what we can.
We're going to have to leave it there, but we will continue this dialogue, I hope, in the future. The sort of the command economy, I think that's going to be necessary. People will, in fact, find, as you pointed out, our parents live really, really well, with much less junk and smaller houses, but happier ones for sure. I think, and from my point of view, once we start on that path, that the left, in fact, directs the mobilization, people will not want to go back to huge houses to heap for no good reason, and all of the rest of the absurd huge cars to drive around for no reason at all. In fact, that world is already being rejected by the children, the teens and older of America. So, Richard, we'll have to continue. Before we end, though, tell people where they can find your books and writing.
Okay, well, the first place to look is the System Change website, systemchange.climatechange.org. It has a number of my articles and so forth on there. My book, Green Capitalism, the God That Failed, came out in 2016. You can find that on the web and Amazon or wherever, something besides Amazon, hopefully. My book, China's Engine of Environmental Collapse, published by Pluto last July. Then I have a lot of articles on the web at various journals and so forth. I would mention my article 6 thesis on saving the planet at the Next System Project. The Next System Project is very interesting. It has lots of great contributions. Mine is one of very many really excellent contributions there. So that's a good source to look. And a review of Real World Economics Review. That's a journal I publish a lot of articles in. And also in Common Dreams and Truth Out and so forth. Just Google my name and it'll come up. There's also my website, richardanthonysmith.org. I need to add recent publications, but it's got a lot of my old stuff.
Richard Anthony Smith, thanks for talking to us today.
You're welcome. Thanks.